Hey guys, Alexa here. Welcome back to This Is Life Unfiltered. If you have been following along with the podcast, we've had some incredible guests on over the past few weeks, specifically Jade, and we had the founder of FindSpark, whose interview I loved because I was so excited to hear all about finding your dream job. Even though I already obviously found mine, I think that that's so important that young people get the tools and resources they need to land their dream job. So today I've got another young entrepreneur on, but before I get into it, make sure to follow This Is Life Unfiltered on social media at This Is Life Podcast. And my also personal social media is at Alexa_Curtis. So today I've got the founder of Beekeepers Natural, which Carly Stein started at the age of 24 back in 2015. She's actually a Goldman Sachs trader, and now she runs her company. So she is the true living, breathing definition that you can go from corporate to running a nutraceutical product line that provides effective natural solutions for stronger immunity health. And I love honey and all that kind of stuff. So Carly, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I am so curious how you went from working at Goldman Sachs to starting this company. So take me back to the beginning.
Yeah. So I had a really interesting journey. So I started beekeeping when I was in college, and I really started out of a necessity. I have an autoimmune condition, and it doesn't affect my life all that much, except for the fact that I can't take antibiotics. So growing up, I was just always sick, cold, flu, sore throat, you name it. And then I didn't really have a lot of options in terms of healing because, you know, over-the-counter stuff, I was seriously allergic to. And then that sort of pushed me to search in the natural world. And I was really excited by all these promising, amazing new natural products. And then I ended up pretty consistently disappointed because a lot of these amazing looking natural products that promised the world, they just didn't deliver end results. So I was in this weird space where I was super interested in the natural world, but also really disillusioned with these products that promised to change my life that did nothing. And then I, like, traditional antibiotics and over-the-counter things just weren't an option. So basically, I was always sick with no way of recovering and a really, really weak immune system. And that was just kind of how I lived my life. And when I was in college, I did a semester abroad, and I got really sick at the time that I was traveling in Italy, of all places, because that's the place you want to be sick in. And I was going to have to go home and have surgery. And I was just like, absolutely not. I busted my ass waitressing to come to Italy and come to Europe, and I don't want to cut my exchange short again for sickness. And so I was looking for anything to get me healthy, and I went into a pharmacy in Italy, and I had really severe tonsillitis at that time. So, like, my face was visibly swollen, and the pharmacist took one look at me and she was like, "We need propolis." I'd never heard of propolis before, which was interesting because I fancied myself to be quite educated in the wellness world even at that time. But I was desperate and willing to try anything. And so I tried this propolis stuff. At that time, I thought the bees only made honey. I had no idea how deep the bee products go. But anyways, I tried the propolis, and within about 5 days, I made a full recovery. So basically, propolis functioned in my body the way antibiotics do for normal people. So that was really my first healing experience, and it was kind of a game changer because, you know, after all of the things I'd tried, nothing had affected me in that way. Nothing had been so effective at actually getting rid of a viral issue. So I made a full recovery, was able to continue my time abroad. And then as I was traveling around, I started to notice bee products everywhere. So Europe's really progressive with their natural health world. And so they tend to, yeah, they're just kind of ahead of the curve. And so, you know, I was doing things like when I was in Copenhagen at the smoothie bar, they had bee pollen to go in my smoothie. And I started using royal jelly when I was in France, and propolis I could find almost everywhere. It was super accessible. So it was just really interesting to me that this whole class of products that goes beyond honey was, it had so many different benefits and was really widely known and used in Europe, and yet I hadn't stumbled upon it in North America. So I'm using all this stuff. I'm not even thinking about starting a business at all. I'm just like fired up as a consumer to finally, after years and years, find something that's working for me. And I'm feeling better than ever. So I made it to the rest of my exchange, not getting sick, and I definitely wasn't leading my healthiest lifestyle at that time. So it was pretty remarkable that I wasn't, you know, bogged down with colds and infections and all of the fun stuff. And I just became kind of obsessed with bee products. And then I finished up my exchange and went back to North America to finish up college to do my final semester. And of course, when midterms rolled around, I got sick again. And I knew what I needed this time, finally. I just needed propolis. So I went to every health food store. Nobody knew what I was talking about. And then I started going to the farmer's markets, and I did find propolis there. But the propolis that I did find in the farmer's market made me really sick. And I figured out it was because it had exposure to pesticides. And that's a real issue with bee products. Even when you're buying organic ones, they're not typically controlled for pesticide exposure and toxicity, which is a huge problem. I think it's a problem for anyone when you're looking to lead a healthy lifestyle. The last thing you want is, you know, pesticide covered products. But specifically for autoimmune people or people who are treating something or have sensitive systems, it's sort of the opposite of what you need. So I was like, okay, I guess I have to take matters into my own hands and do this myself. So I reached out to a local beekeeping association with the intention of starting my own beekeeping operations. And I did just that. And what I did was I started beekeeping in a super remote area so I can actually monitor pesticide exposure. And I started making my own products. And even then, still totally not thinking about it as a company, I pretty much was just having the time of my life. And that's when I really fell in love with the bees. I started learning about all of the different incredible applications of their superfoods, but then also learning more about the role that they play in our environment and just how integral they really are. So that was a really amazing learning experience and really where I found my passion.
What year was this that you were in Italy, correct?
This is 2012.
So this is 2012. And were you done with college at this point?
Oh, no, I was in college.
You were
in
college.
On weekends. Oh, yeah.
And what college were you in?
I went to University of Victoria. I'm from Canada, so I went to school in Canada.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. So you really kind of went across the country to explore and follow this passion and then ended up getting pretty sick.
Exactly. And literally, it really wasn't like, oh, I see an opportunity in the market. It was just, this is the stuff that works for me. I need it. I'm going to figure out how to get it. So I always say the company comes from a really authentic place. It just came from me solving my own problem. So I'm just making these bee products and start sharing them with friends, my roommates. Next thing you know, people on campus are Facebook messaging me to get their hands on these products. And that was sort of my first moment where I was like, okay, this is interesting. It's working for, you know, a broader population than myself. And people beyond me also clearly want natural alternatives. Like, people are equally frustrated with what the market has, you know, kind of put out right now. So anyways, I have this.
For those who don't know, you have also been featured on Forbes 30 Under 30, which is quite exciting. I wanted to mention that before I forget. So congrats.
Oh, thank you so much. But yeah, so I'm making all these bee products and like kind of selling them to random people on campus. And I have this dream of like starting a company around this, but I get an job offer from a hedge fund out of school. And, you know, that looks good on paper and makes sense to your friends and family. And I had zero money at that time. So that made a lot more sense than starting a bee product company. And then more than that, I just didn't think, I didn't know what it would take to start a company. I was really insecure about it. So I took the traditional road. And so I went to join this hedge fund. I was there for about 10 months and then I got recruited by Goldman. So I joined Goldman 2014. And it was at Goldman that I really sort of started figuring out beekeepers. So I was just really, Goldman was an incredible experience for me for a lot of reasons, but one of the biggest ones was because it forced me to really get in touch with who I am and what I want. So I was really, really miserable there. And I felt really trapped because I had this great on paper job. I've been receiving the most more positive external feedback than I ever had in my life. I'm quote unquote, like, that is successful, but I'm totally miserable.
Did you ever expect to become an entrepreneur?
No, I didn't. I've always been interested in business. I actually, had I not gotten a job offer in the finance world out of school, I probably would have gone to law school, which would have been a mistake, an expensive mistake for me. But I didn't think, I always have been very interested in business and finance, but I didn't see myself as an entrepreneur purely because of confidence. I think that I've always wanted to be that. I just never admitted it to myself because I never thought that I had what it takes, which is just like a silly story I told myself. for whatever reason.
Which is also incredibly relatable that any young entrepreneur would kind of think that way. And how you came to start this company was so natural, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really was. It was really something that I just sort of fell into. So basically what it took was me having this job that was great on paper that I was really miserable at and getting to the point where I was so miserable that I needed to change. So basically I became pretty depressed. I was working kind of crazy hours. I was on a really intense team. I had this job that was just really sort of like out of sync with everything that I am. And I needed to at least take up a hobby to make me happy because I was just really isolated and, you know, really just not myself at that time. So I started beekeeping and I started making products in my apartment and I would go to farmers markets on weekends and sell them. And everyone thought I was batshit crazy. But it was just, I was like, you know what? Like, it's the same sort of thing as having a hobby like baking or, you know, it's just, this is what I want to do in my free time. So in 2015, that's kind of what I started doing. And I didn't think about it as a business. I think I just incorporated like I wanted to sell at farmers markets, but I certainly wasn't thinking about it as a business at that time. It was just like my little side hobby. And I spent, you know, all my time at Goldman Trading. But it started growing. It's what started happening was people started using these products and then sending me emails about how, you know, I remember getting an email from one woman whose 6-year-old son has a pretty severe autoimmune condition and he has chronic strep throat. And Propolis worked for him. And, you know, I was getting kind of customer reach outs from all over the place. And then people wanted to start shipping products to their cousin in Chicago or, you know, sending it elsewhere. And so I was like, okay, I guess I need to set up a website so people have access to this stuff. And I did just that. And it basically got to a point where stores started approaching me. And I would also, you know, show up at stores with a backpack full of products and beg them to take us on. All on weekends. And it basically got to a point where we were in 600 stores. And I had this like wild double life where I was running a company, doing every single thing myself, and then also had a really demanding day job in the finance world. And I was like, you know what, like someone has to run this company and it's going to be me. And I have no idea how to do it. And I'm terrified that I'm leaving this job that's the best job I'm ever going to have. But I'm not happy here. I'm really happy when I'm working with the bees. I really feel like I have impact and have potential that have impact with this company, and I have to just take the leap. So I took the leap end of 2016. And 2017, it was like kind of just me setting everything up. And then in 2018, we went from one employee to 14. So that was pretty cool. And yeah, that kind of brings us to where we are today.
Oh my gosh. I've got so many questions. So a lot of people who listen to this podcast are either working corporate jobs or debating whether or not to change majors. So you left such a high stakes, high paying company to go on your own. And that is a very, very hard leap to make. So what advice do you have for people who are working a corporate job? They just want to leave, but they're so scared of losing that security.
So I think for one, don't be hasty with it. It really is a big decision. It took me a while. I could have probably left 6 months earlier than I did, but I needed to get there myself. I needed to get past the fear. So really be thoughtful about it. And for me, I mean, there's no reason you can't have a side hustle. It was hard, but I definitely managed. And I think, you know, anyone has the capacity to do that. I think there's nothing wrong with like starting something up a little bit before you go all in and sort of testing the waters and making sure it's right for you. Cause it is a massive decision. It's really, really hard. And you really have to be ready for it. You have to be very aware of what it does to your budget, what it does to your lifestyle. So that's the first thing is just, you know, don't be hasty with that decision. It's a massive one. It's one of the bigger ones you're going to make in your life. Think about all areas of it and how it's going to impact you and really be meticulous about planning. So that's the first thing. The second thing is once you've done that, once you've gone through the budget, you've been really objective with how your life's going to look and how this is going to affect you and everyone around you, and you feel confident that this is the decision, you just got to do it because it's not going to get easier. You're only going to take on more responsibilities in life as you go. it's only going to get scarier. You're only going to get more comfortable where you are. So eventually, so once you've, you know, taken all the steps to plan, you need to just make that jump. And for me, like a big thing with making that jump was I had to just keep asking myself, like, what's on the other side of fear? I was so terrified. I was so scared I would fail. But I was like, you know what? It's better to fail than live so cautiously that you never take a chance and then you just fail by default. So
was your family supportive of this decision that you decided to make? Because you didn't really just drop out of college and come up with this idea. You had already been deciding whether or not to kind of pursue this full time or realizing the benefits when you were in college of this brand that you could potentially build.
So they didn't really, when I wasn't really taking it seriously. I honestly, the same way that you might have a friend who like enjoys baking cookies, that's how I was with meat products. I was just like making this stuff and kind of giving it to some people and like selling it to a few people. Nobody thought of it as a real business until I made it into a real business starting, you know, beginning of 2017. So people thought no one was supportive about it, which was really hard. I actually got interventioned by my friends and family, which was a terrible experience, but also empowering in a weird way because it forced me to really get clear on how badly I want this and like what I'm willing to do for it. So really no one was supportive at that time. Everyone thought it was a huge mistake and I was kind of blowing up my life and I was having like a millennial life crisis.
What did you say back to them when they were kind of intervening with this idea? Because you were so young that it's not that midlife crisis where you're 36 and you're leaving that corporate job. You are still so young and have so many different opportunities and paths you could pursue. So what did you say back to them when they were putting this idea down?
At first I listened to them. You know, I stayed in my seat and had horrible anxiety and panic attacks every single day and just felt trapped. And then it got to a point where I had to just really do it for me. And I had the awareness of the fact that, yes, I'm early in my life. There's a lot of opportunity, but it's going to be so much harder to take a big swing like this as when I'm more established, when I'm in my late 30s or 40s, or, you know, like as I take on more responsibility in my life, it will get much harder to make this sort of switch and leap. So I understood that. And what I ended up just having to say to them was like, look, I really appreciate your opinion. Thanks. I'm doing this. And what actually ended up happening is right after I left Goldman, like literally after I quit, I think like a week after, I booked a flight to Indonesia and I worked from Southeast Asia for 3 months because I had to get away from the chatter. I had to get away from all the people who thought it was crazy and were giving me their opinion. And I was aware that all of these opinions came from a good place. It came from people not wanting to see me do something that's improbable and risky, but I just had to do it for me and I had to get away from them. So went to a different part of the world. I went by myself. I, you know, booked myself into a super, super cheap hostel. I worked at a co-work space and I set the company up from abroad. And that's what I did right after I left Goldman for 3 months.
That's so funny because I have had so many other successful entrepreneurs on this podcast who have said the same thing about going to Thailand or Bali or something and setting up their company there. So maybe that's like the best piece of advice is to leave America and just go and start it there. But you didn't really have any experience with entrepreneurship. So when you sat down, even at this co-working space, were you completely overwhelmed with what to do? Or were you just like, I know what needs to be done to make this into a company?
I kind of had an awareness of what needed to be done. By the way, Southeast Asia is great because it's so cheap. So if you want to get away and go somewhere like super exotic and different, you know, I think that's why it's the choice place for a lot of entrepreneurs because it's really affordable. Flight is not, but once you're there, you can live in a very affordable way and you can get away from everything. So yeah, I had a great experience with that. But anyways, when it came to starting my company, yes, I had no idea what I was doing. I did have a really strong aptitude for financial concepts. So, you know, I had an awareness of what I wanted the company to look like. I was really good at building projections. So I definitely had, you know, a little bit of a benefit there, but beyond that, no idea how to write a business plan. I never took a business course in my life. I did sciences in my undergrad. So literally zero idea, but I used I just found the resources that are accessible to all of us. I would listen to every podcast. I read a lot of really great books. And I just taught myself, and, you know, anyone can do that, which is a really amazing thing about today's world, is that literally all information is pretty accessible and anybody has the capability to learn anything if they want to work hard at it.
If you have that little itch and you're working corporate, or you're even in college and pursuing this side hustle and maybe even making some money, do you think that your piece of advice would be to just leave, to drop everything and pursue this full time, or go into it and be more cautious?
It depends where you're at. I really think that going into it cautiously with your other things sort of on the side and getting a base is important, because this is the other part of it, is that entrepreneurship's really hard. Starting a company is incredibly challenging. It's consuming. You have to really love what you're doing. And sometimes it's, you know, the right entrepreneur with the wrong idea, or vice versa. And so testing the waters a little bit, I don't think that can hurt. And that doesn't mean to live too cautiously and not take a risk. That means, you know, give yourself a few months of trying it and seeing how much you love this business. And by the way, having to navigate a side hustle and a full-time corporate job, there's nothing that better prepares you for how intense a startup can be. Like, my time management skills grew insanely just because I didn't have a choice. I had to go into work every morning. I was bootstrapping my company, and I had to keep running my side hustle. And so it taught me some really valuable skills, and it definitely taught me how to sort of structure my workflow in a way that's really beneficial to how I work today.
I think nowadays the concept behind entrepreneurship, maybe in part due to social media, is also so glamorized. So I like that you're being so honest about how difficult it is, or still is sometimes, because it's not easy. And even when you're very successful, if anything, it becomes a little bit harder because now you've got more people paying attention.
100%. For me, at least, it's so rewarding and it's so worthwhile. And like, I feel really grateful to be able to do what I love every day, but there's no part of it that's easy. And it actually does get harder because you're responsible for more people. Like, now that we have a team, there's people whose careers I'm responsible for. There's more people watching, there's more eyes on us, there's more expectation. And that's all stuff that's really motivating to me, and we can totally manage. But you really do have to love what you're working on, because you can't tune out. Like, the big difference for me is that even with a super demanding job, it eventually ends. Like, you clock out at one point in the day, you go on vacation, you finish projects. But with a startup, when it's yours, it's literally like a child that's always kind of crying. Like, it's impossible for me to fully turn off. And I work really hard at that. And I'm working really hard at cultivating a mindfulness practice. And I think that's really important for everyone, especially entrepreneurs. But it really is something where, you know, when you're not working, nothing is. And so you better really be madly in love with what you're doing if you're going to start a company around it.
When you were in college and you were kind of starting to get feedback from other students about the product and potentially even wanting to get some from you, were you then starting to sell it, or were you just giving this away for free?
I was, for friends, I'd give it away for free, but to anyone else, I would sell it because, you know, I needed money.
How did you decide what to sell it for, and the packaging and all of that, while you were in college?
Oh, there was no packaging. It was literally just in like random bottles. Like, I would buy, you know, at Whole Foods, you can buy those glass bottles it was in those. And when I eventually did get packaging for it, our first packaging branding, I used 99 Designs, and it was like a crowdsourced design thing, and it was not as cute as it is now. So I had no idea what I was doing and no money to do it properly at that time. And then how I priced it was, I basically would price it based off what it was priced at farmers markets.
That's so intriguing that you also use 99 Designs, because I love 99 Designs and I use them for everything, but 99 Designs is not cheap. So when you say you were crowdsourcing for that initial graphic design, what do you mean? For everything, but 99 Designs is not cheap. So when you say you were crowdsourcing for that initial graphic design, what do you mean?
So, I mean, 99 Designs is much cheaper than using an agency or even a freelance designer.
But for a startup, it's pretty expensive.
I mean, I did our first design just for one label. I think I paid maybe $600. This was literally just a hobby until, you know, really end of 2015. So I was using my salary from Goldman Sachs to do anything that I was doing.
Yeah. So
all of our initial product runs, everything.
If you had been still in college, you might not have used 99 designs because 600 is a lot, I guess, for somebody who's in college.
Yeah. If I had started this full out in college, I would not have been able to afford that. Or I would have, you know, taken extra shifts, waitressing or something.
I love that you say that. What do you think you would have done differently if you had started this fully in college, if you had taken that full leap and even had that full finance career? How do you think things would have played out differently or the same?
So I think things would have been the same in many ways because I really was proactive about learning. I wouldn't say I'm the most brilliant person in the world. I just worked really hard at getting good at all the things I was bad at. And I read everything and, you know, used all the resources that I mentioned before that are available. So I would have probably just started that process a little earlier, which would have been nice. And then I think I still would have bootstrapped it for a while. It would have been much more of a strain because, you know, entering the workforce is very different than my college life. But I think I still would have bootstrapped it because until you're 100% sure, and for me, I really wanted proof of concept before I raised money. And it was important for me to run my business that way and on my own terms.
At what point did you start thinking, okay, this is going to become something, right? I mean, now you've been on so many different outlets and Forbes and everything, but what was the period of time like in between kind of waiting for those kind of opportunities to come? Because when you start any company, it doesn't really go viral overnight like some people think. This stuff takes a lot of time.
It took a really long time. I always tell people it's a slow grind, and there wasn't like one crazy thing that we did that moved the needle. It was a lot of little things that finally added up to people taking notice. And so, when people expect things to kind of go viral instantly or things to happen overnight, I think that's, for some people, they have that luck, but in most cases, it's just a grind. But the grind is also the most rewarding and the most exciting and where you learn the most. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. But I remember having this moment. When was this? We just did Bulletproof, had their conference, their Bulletproof like biohacker conference.
Like the protein bars and the all about like the butter coffee.
Yeah. So they had a conference a few years ago. I think this is like mid 2017. And we launched, I can't remember exactly what it was. Anyways, we exhibited at this conference. We had a booth there. And we were sharing our Elixir brain fuel, which is our natural nootropic, for the first time. And I was really nervous going into that because it's like the most intense biohacker environment. This is a brand new product. It's a little bit unique with like bee products. It's plant-based. It's like a paleo-keto community. So anyways, I was super nervous. And so we launched the product. The conference opened Friday at 6 p.m. And we were 100% sold out of our Elixir brain fuel by Saturday at 11 a.m. And then that was kind of when I was, and you know, these are people who are professional biohackers. And so they're a critical audience and, you know, they certainly were not just buying into whatever they saw. And there was a lot of amazing products out there to choose from. So that I remember at the end of that conference, I just had this feeling of like, it's happening. I can't really describe it, but it was just a feeling of like, this is going to be okay.
Was it like kind of that instant feeling where you felt like I know that feeling, and that's such a kind of specific feeling, but it almost gives you the courage to keep going.
100%. It was exactly what I needed to have the courage to keep going.
So after
I had doubts every step of the way.
After you left that conference, then what happened then?
I kept grinding. I kept putting product out there. I kept, you know, taking on different marketing initiatives. We just kept grinding. And then eventually it just started really working in a bigger and bigger way. And that's still happening now. Like, you know, we have major goals for this company and we've been really fortunate. We've seen a lot of success, but we're certainly still just getting started. Like in many ways, we think of the company as being just 2 years old because I really only left Goldman end of 2016.
And it's not easy, like we said at the beginning of this episode, to make this sustainable. Is there one piece of advice you'd have for people out there who do want to start their own kind of consumer-based company right at the beginning? I mean, how do you get through those periods of time where you're just so confused and you're so lost until you have that moment like you had at that conference?
So, by the way, that moment was awesome, but I still need reminders because like it's still, even at this level, it's still really hard. There's just new challenges that come up. But the thing that my biggest piece of advice around this is if you want to run a company, there's one muscle that you need to build up, and it's the muscle that it's basically you need to get really good at being bad at things. So you need to build up that muscle that allows you to keep flexing when you're sucking at something. Because the reality is, as a CEO or as a founder, your job is going to change at every stage of the company. The second you get really good at something, it's going to be like, okay, now it's time to hire someone to do this. And here's my new job that I have absolutely no idea how to do. So you have to get really good and really comfortable at that really scary state and stage where you have to take something on that you have no idea how to do, that you know that you're not going to be good at, and just be confident in the fact that you will learn this because you're a person and you're going to work really hard and you're capable, because we all are.
Right now in the media too, there's so much talk about not going to college or entrepreneurs leaving college and starting their successful, viral, whatever. But how do you think that college played a role in your success?
For me, college was a really important experience, both socially and academically. I took a lot of chemistry courses. A lot of what I learned in college framed sort of how I think about building products today. And I do lead our chem team today. And I don't know if I would have as easy of a time interfacing them had I not done the degree that I did. And then also just, you know, meeting people and building your network. And in college, at the start of getting comfortable being bad at things, getting comfortable taking on new things and building new skill sets and learning how to learn. So for me, it was really important. I don't think it's the be all and end all. We certainly, when we're hiring people, we don't care all that much about their degree or where they went to school. But yeah, for me, it played a role. But again, I think my life experience and my time in the workforce maybe framed how I run my company a little bit more.
I'm just so even curious what it was even like working at Goldman Sachs. I mean, did you make a lot of friends working? It's a little bit of a kind of side topic, but did you make a lot of friends working there? Because especially in that kind of corporate finance environment, from what I hear, it's very intimidating and it's very cutthroat.
Yeah, it's definitely cutthroat. So I joined Goldman because I was at the hedge fund for 10 months after college. I joined Goldman as a lateral hire, so I didn't get put through the analyst program. So I kind of went in blind and I didn't really have like a peer group, which made it a lot harder. And then the team that I joined, I was on a trading team that was all senior people. So typically there's like a few analysts on one team, but I was the only analyst on my team. So it was like me and a bunch of like 40, 50 something dudes. So I didn't have the best social experience there. That being said, I do have some people who I'm still so close with, who I met at Goldman. And, you know, when you're working those kinds of hours, it is really important to have a network. But my team was quite cutthroat, and it just wasn't the right environment for me. I definitely wasn't happy there.
And in a sense, that probably assists with having a successful startup, because you have such a cutthroat mentality where you're kind of in that no bullshit all the time phase, right?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think a lot of my experience at Goldman framed some of the positives and some of the ways that I run my company now.
Specifically, keep going.
Well, the negatives too. Like I had a manager who I had a really rough relationship with. And, you know, I really hated going into work every day. And so now at our company, you know, we speak to everyone on the team about where they see themselves and what they really want. And we have an ongoing conversation and an open door policy about talking about your career aspirations, because, you know, we have an understanding that people grow and people outgrow things, and maybe people are hired for a job but they have aspirations somewhere else. So we try to put them on plans to get them where they want to be.
How many full-time employees do you have at the moment?
14.
Oh my gosh. And initially it just started as you.
Yeah.
What has that journey been like? Because that's a ton of employees to have. And especially at your age, I mean, that's not really common for that kind of responsibility.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And we're hiring right now too, which is crazy. That has been, for me, one of the most impactful experiences of my life. You know, having, it's honestly such a pleasure to work with these incredible people. And I am on a continual basis just impressed by their aptitude to learn new things and their curiosity and their passion for this company and this cause. So it's pretty amazing. It honestly sometimes feels like I just have 14 kids because it's just like, I just care about these people so much because they've bought into my dream in such a big way and made it their own. And I love them so much for that.
Is there anything specifically that you look for when hiring?
100%. It's all attitude. Really don't care about your, you know, previous, I mean, it plays in, but I'm not massive on work experience or where you went to college. What I want to know is, are you going to show up every day? Are you going to work your ass off? How motivated are you? Like, we have a very entrepreneurial environment. I always talk about entrepreneurship. Everyone at the company is encouraged to treat the company like it's theirs and take on new things. And like, it's very much meritocracy and you are very much rewarded for taking risks in your position. And so I just look for somebody who has an attitude and a value system that's really in line with what we do. And then also it's really important to have an understanding of the cause, and the cause being both, you know, saving and supporting pollinators, and then also changing the face of wellness and, you know, giving a group of people access to products and tools to heal that they maybe didn't have before.
Mm-hmm. Beekeepers Natural is also sold in a decent amount of stores only in Canada at the moment.
Oh, no, we're in the U.S. as well.
Oh, you are in the U.S. Okay, because I'm on the kind of online locator and it was just showing Canada, but I'm also technically terrible at everything. So how did you get into some of those stores? Because for those listening who maybe have that idea, that's a completely different level of trying to sell from a website versus getting into huge stores like Vitamin Shoppe.
Yeah, so we're really focused on our website, and that's still, you know, that makes up over 60% of our sales. But getting into stores is a great way to give broader access to all of these products. And so it started off literally, I would go to stores with a backpack, try to talk to the manager and basically annoy them into trying out our product and like leave a box there. And then what happened was we got into around 50 stores that way. So we were selling direct. And then once you get into enough stores that way, then you start working with a broker and distributor. So, you know, once we had enough sales, we could approach sort of a larger organization that has a sales network.
So you completely did it the guerrilla way then with the backpack. You weren't cold pitching via the phone.
Like Whole Foods, I got by LinkedIn messaging everyone.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. What was that experience like? By LinkedIn messaging like head people at Whole Foods?
Yeah, I just did a lot of creeping of Whole Foods Canada, and I did a lot of LinkedIn messaging, and then I would follow that up. I would figure out where their head office was and send product packages, handwritten notes. And it took a while. It took a lot of annoying people into taking on our product, but that's what I did. It was like all guerrilla tactics with how we grew this company. Even in the early stages on the marketing front, like we didn't have money to work with a digital marketing agency or even hire somebody to help with our Facebook ads. So the way that we kind of gained notoriety was having a physical presence. We would go to farmers markets, we would go to shows, we would interact with our customer base, and you know, people, the word sort of spread that way. So everything that we did, it was very, very guerrilla, very like shoestring budget, do it yourself.
What about the farmers market kind of intrigued you to start selling there? Because I think a lot of people who start consumer companies nowadays go right to social media. Like they're trying to sell from social media. But do you think that maybe that's not the best way to go about getting your company out in front of people?
I think it's really important to have a social media presence today. I think not just important, I think it's necessary. I was doing our Instagram and we still had a social media presence. We just didn't have like a paid advertising structure really. But the farmers market was really important for me because that's where I could really interface with my customers. I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just me and I wasn't just like having this crazy idea, and that this product line was really the right thing and really going to work. So, you know, having that one-on-one experience, having that face-to-face experience with our customer base and being able to product test and have conversations and explain what we're doing and why we're doing it, that was really important for me.
At any point, did you have anyone make comments like, this doesn't help, or like, you know, anything negative about the company?
Oh yeah, for sure. Occasionally. I mean, it's not possible to make one thing that's going to work for every single person in the world. So, you know, there's definitely some people who don't love our product line, but you know, we're pretty fortunate in that for like every one person, we have, you know, so many more that love it and send us these incredible healing stories. And yeah, for the most part, we take product building really seriously. You know, like we have a 30-person contract chem team. We practice third-party pesticide testing. Everything we do is NPN certified. So we actually validate all of the health claims we make and do natural product testing. So our products are built in a pretty intense way and they're engineered to work for the broadest demographic. So we really do build things that work. And that's really framed by my own experience as a consumer. Like I, you know, spent years spending money and time I didn't have on superfoods that told me I was going to have this crazy healing experience that just never happened. So with my company, it was really important that we're authentic, that we make things that actually work. This isn't just a marketing game. And also that we don't make anything that I can't personally take every day because I am my own guinea pig for this and I have like the world's most sensitive system.
Yeah. What do you think about how the health industry has changed and these boutique fitness industries and ClassPass? Because it's changed how so many consumers buy and what young people are buying into in terms of these trends.
I think it's good and bad. I think it's amazing that we have such an awareness of the wellness world today and such an open-minded approach. I also think that there's a lot out there that's unregulated, heavily marketed, and isn't necessarily effective. So people really do need to kind of be their own scientists and really be discerning about what they put in their bodies. Because just because something looks amazing doesn't mean it's amazing for you, or doesn't mean that the way that it's been processed is going to be the most effective form.
So as a health person who's got such a successful health company, when you're in these health food stores, what are you looking for and how do you decide what product to buy? It was kind of just by chance that you ended up using like a kind of form of honey when you were in Italy, but for people who might have a, you know, another disease and aren't necessarily willing to just jump at a product and really want to know how any certain product can change their life. I mean, how do you advise them to pick? If you're in a lineup with 100 forms of, you know, honey, which one do you go for?
Yeah. So first of all, this is like a super common misconception. Propolis is actually a totally different compound than honey. Honey comes from floral nectars and it's used as the bee's source of carbs. It's their energy source. And then propolis comes from plant and tree resin. So it's a little more adaptogenic and medicinal in nature. And then the bees use it as the building blocks of their immune system, or you can kind of think of it as like the medicine of the hive. And so for humans, propolis has over 300 beneficial compounds. It's antiviral, antifungal, antimicrobial, antibacterial. And that's why it's so much more powerful than honey and so great for immune boosting, for cold, flu, sore throat, and all that fun stuff. So I just wanted to mention that because everyone, including myself, when I first learned about propolis, I assumed it was just like honey, but the bees actually make so many different things. It's really fascinating. So yeah, so that's a little tangent there, but how I shop is kind of insane because I feel like I know too much. A big thing for me is, you know, I buy products that are also available in Europe and Canada just because they tend to have a little bit, like in the US it's FDA and then it's kind of the Wild West when it comes to natural. Whereas in other parts of the world, like in Canada, for example, Health Canada does provide a regulatory structure. So if a product goes through the experience of getting an NPN or natural product number, it means that they've legally validated their claims. So, you know, having gone through that experience with all of our products, I'm a little bit more trusting of products that even like American companies that also retail in Canada. And, you know, you look at the package, you can see the claims they make in other parts of the world. Now that's a lot of work and I don't know that everyone's going to do that. So the biggest thing is just really try to get to know the company. I think the stories that companies share, the narratives are really important and tell you a lot and speak a lot to quality. And I certainly wouldn't purchase something if it doesn't speak to quality and sustainability.
Do you think that a lot of the stuff on the market right now is kind of BS or no?
Yeah, I do.
Is that competitive then in any sense for a founder who has, you know, a company, or if you see any company that's kind of trying to compete with you, or do you really just stay in your lane and advise other people to stay in theirs too, even when there is so much competition?
So right now, I think it's really important for us to stay in our lane and focus on being at the best of what we're doing. And that's what I tell other people. Like, you know, if you're looking around, it can get really confusing and really overwhelming. And looking at what other people are doing isn't necessarily going to make you the best at what you're doing. So we really pride ourselves on being the bee product specialist and, you know, being very effective at the supplements that we create and building the best products that we possibly can.
No, I think it's fantastic. And I'm so glad that I can see your authenticity, because that's also sometimes really rare with people, is kind of being able to see that authenticity shine through. Where do you want beekeepers and yourself personally to be in, you know, 5 or 10 years from now?
So 5 or 10 years, I want to continue to expand our line and expand our basically retail partners. So I think down the line, we would want to be sold at a lot more locations and just really accessible to everyone. And then for me down the line, I just want to be leading a bigger team. The sense of pride that I have over my little team right now is insane. And I want to continue being an effective leader and growing and being able to support everyone.
Oh my gosh, that is so inspiring. I really respect that. I bet like 4 or 5 years from now, you'll have like quadruple the amount of team members.
I hope so. I honestly, it's like cheesy when I talk about it. We did our team retreat a few weeks ago and I literally was bawling in front of everyone. They're used to it. But yeah, I was like crying because I was just, I'm so overwhelmed by how dedicated they are to this company. It's really incredible to see people who care this deeply about a cause. Like there's, you know, I'm so passionate about saving the bees and having impact there. And then also, especially given my personal experience about changing accessibility and quality standards for natural health products, and seeing people from all different backgrounds really dig into this cause and mission and really connect with our customers and connect with each other, it's just incredible.
Also as well, where is your office?
So we have an office in Toronto and then we have a remote team in LA. And so we all kind of go back and forth.
Yeah, that's where I'm based, LA. But how do you maintain a balance when you're a successful CEO and you're also young, you're not 50 years old? So what do you do to mentally stay on top of everything during your insanely busy life?
So this is probably where I'm the worst. I really struggle with balance. I even like, I'll go through periods where my friends just like don't hear from me for a month because I'm working nonstop. I'm trying really hard right now to change that. So I started doing some corporate coaching. I'm trying really hard to meditate daily, although it's a struggle. And I'm doing a lot of like gratitude lists and trying to journal more. So I'm really trying to incorporate practices that help me slow down, take stock of everything, and unplug. But it's something that's like, you know, it's not really my nature. I'm pretty intense and type A. But, you know, living that way, you'll burn out. And at the end of the day, we run a wellness company and I don't want any of my employees to feel pressure to be working constantly. That's not the environment I want to create. That's something that I actually really wasn't happy with at Goldman Sachs. And having a balance is important for everyone. And also, it's an illusion. I used to really operate under the assumption that like more, harder, better, faster. And it's an illusion that doing more necessarily leads to better. I do some of my best work and I have my most creative experiences after I've unplugged for a little bit and come back to it. And so, you know, trying really hard to sort of change my mentality around that and carve out time for myself is a challenge for me, but something I'm really focused on right now.
And everyone is a work in progress, entrepreneur or not. A lot of entrepreneurs face that kind of burnout feeling, or feeling like if they continue to work that much, they might be burnout. But it's also so difficult when you're so passionate about something to not work all the time. So just finding that balance.
Totally.
Well, Carly, I think you're fantastic. And I would love to know where everyone can find out more about you and the company online or buy some of the product.
Thank you so much. So we have everything available at beekeepersnaturals.com. That's our website. And we have lots of amazing information on products, on the bees, on the company and just some generally beautiful and motivating stuff on our Instagram, which is beekeepers_natural. And you can find us on Facebook as well. And yeah, we'd love to hear from you. So anyone who wants to check us out, please say hi.
Yes, I love the Instagram and I'm such a huge fan of the logo now. I think it's so awesome, but that's phenomenal. Thank you so much for taking the time. Make sure you guys tune in to all past 64 episodes now of This Is Life Unfiltered to hear from your favorite founders, and make sure to submit if you want to be a guest on the podcast well, you can actually submit directly at tilupodcast.com. I think that's the easy way to do it, or get in touch with me somehow, because I love seeing suggestions for other founders or people who have inspiring stories to share. So make sure also to subscribe on iTunes on the podcast app, or leave a review so I know who you want to hear on the podcast next. Thank you guys so much for the support and tuning in every week, and have an awesome rest of your week. Bye.